is crackling, everybody. Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on the Number Fire Podcast Network and numberfire.com. My name is Jim Saunas. I am a senior writer and analyst for Number Fire, joined here, as always, by Brandon Gadula, a senior editor and analyst for Number Fire. We're here to break down what has happened in Week 15 of the NFL season, our final recap podcast of the entire year. Brandon, kind of a chaotic, I think it's the best word for it, Week 15. How are you doing today?
Yeah, the adjective I picked out for how I'm doing today is perplexed.
Yeah.
Because I think that Thursday night game set us up for some like false hope. The Sunday slate of games was pretty rough.
Like, I am generally optimistic when it comes to rating the quality of game, because I'm pretty easy to please in general. But it was real bad. And it was real bad for fantasy, too, because a lot of the games we expected to be high scoring weren't.
All two of the ones that we thought might be high scoring.
Yeah, there were more points in Bills Detroit, which had 27 total points, than there were in, I don't remember the final score of the Pats Steelers, but it was more
17,
points
than
there were. Yeah. So the same number of points as that one, and more points than Colts Cowboys. So predictable as always, Brandon.
Yeah. You know how that goes.
As always, we have to safeguard ourselves against these things. We talked on the podcast on Thursday about the ills of using wide receivers at high ownership. That played out with Amari Cooper. And like Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook were predictable plays, I guess, in a sense, who did go off. So there was a path to a really good day if you used a certain process. But that path, I just think, Brandon, was a bit more narrow than usual.
Yeah, there were only sort of a few, like you're trying to say, predictable routes to success. I mean, I had Joe Mixon, I had Dalvin Cook, but I also just had too much Ben Roethlisberger, too much Tom Brady, and that just
check.
Yeah.
Jalen Samuels is good too, I guess. No touchdown, which would have made his day huge, but
he's got like 30 plus fantasy points the past 2 weeks with no touchdowns. But
yeah. He's got 12 and 18, which is, like, awesome. So, like, James Conner's super fun. I'm glad that he'll be back next week. But, like, Jalen Samuels is pretty good. And I was pretty pleased with that. We'll get to that game later on. We're going to go in order here, recap each game of the Week 15 slate thus far. As mentioned, this is our final Week 15, or our final recap pod of the year. Next week is Christmas Eve somehow already. Oh, my goodness. I need to go to Amazon. And the week after that is New Year's Eve in Week 17. So we'll have our preview pods as usual on Thursday, and we'll continue those into the postseason, but no more recap pods after this. So let's start things off here, Brandon, with, as you mentioned, a pretty fun game on Thursday between the Chiefs and the Chargers. Everybody was assuming that the Chiefs were going to win the AFC West, but they forgot that Justin Jackson, the ball carrier, is hashtag RB wins God, and leading the Chargers to a tie in the AFC West now.
Yeah, it was either Justin Jackson or the fact that Mike Williams had three touchdowns, or the fact that, you know, the Chargers either used some analytics or that they had enough of the momentums in this game to go for two.
Analytics would have said go for two after the second to last touchdown.
But we can't
expect head coaches not named Doug Peterson to know that. So we'll grade them on a curve.
Well, when going for two doesn't work out, even though Cam Newton sails one over a receiver's head, you can only blame analytics, and then
only when it goes for
momentum.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, this game was fun. It was one of the only fun games of the weekend, like we already discussed. Philip Rivers had 313 yards in his 38 attempts. Again, got to multiple touchdown passes with two. He's had a high floor pretty much all year, but I mean, he didn't target Keenan Allen once because he left after seven. Oh, I guess he had one target in the end zone, but Allen left after 17 snaps. So that was just 23%. He slammed really hard on an end zone target, almost made a phenomenal catch, but he's now considered week to week with a hit pointer. Keenan Allen had a 28.6% target share in six post bye games entering this one, so he left behind a huge market share in that game. Tyrell Williams actually led with 12 targets. He caught six of them for 71 yards. Mike Williams had nine targets. He caught seven of those for 76 yards. and two touchdowns. He also had a 19-yard rushing touchdown. Tyrell had four of the eight deep targets here. Travis Benjamin had two, but just three targets overall. Mike Williams had just one deep target. But Mike Williams did have four of the seven red zone targets in this one. He also caught the game-winning two-point conversion. Tyrell Williams had two of the seven red zone targets. They host the Ravens on Saturday night in Week 16, so it's a two-game slate. So we can't just rule anybody out for sure. But if there's no Keenan Allen, I think that I might prefer Tyrell Williams over Mike Williams. First of all, for the ownership, because Mike Williams is probably going to be bonkers on that two-game slate. But Tyrell's getting more deep targets. That's more of his game. He's a better bet for heavy volume. But both would certainly be in play on the short slate, even though it's not a good matchup. Speaking of next week, Melvin Gordon should be back for the Chargers, which would kill the value of Justin Jackson. Jackson, though, played 75.7% of the snaps in this game. He had 16 carries, four targets for 85 yards and a touchdown. It's pretty simple. If Gordon can go, he's the guy. If he and Eckler are out, Jackson can handle a big workload. If Eckler and Jackson are the only two healthy backs, it's a bit more of a problem. But we can just I think that Justin Jackson should probably be the guy, but I don't make those decisions. For the Chiefs here, Patrick
was that
Mahomes.
Me talking, or was that you?
That was I just wanted to satisfy you and not say anything.
Because you know we have to recap Rams Eagles or later, and you're trying to get on my good side now so I don't like toss you off the pod later.
Yeah. Okay, if I badmouth Justin Jackson and Jared Goff, I think that this won't be just the final recap podcast of the year. It'll just be the end of the
I respect the hustle. I get it.
Patrick Mahomes threw for just 243 yards on his 34 attempts. He had two touchdowns as well. Travis Kelce, of course, led with nine targets. He caught seven for 61. He's been mostly limited by the Chargers over the past 2 years, but he still has a team-high 26.6% target share on the year. Tyreek Hill played through injury, multiple injuries, really. Tally 46 yards on his seven targets. Snap rate was, pretty similar to usual for the wideouts. Chris Conley led at 95%. Tyreek Hill played 88.3%, DeMarcus Robinson 60%, Kelvin Benjamin just 20% in his debut. In terms of routes, according to Pro Football Focus, Travis Kelce led with 36, Tyreek Hill ran 35, Chris Conley ran 34, and nobody else ran more than 21. So it's still really just Kelce and Hill here that we can look to with any sort of confidence now that Chris Conley's not really forced into some extra volume, unfortunately. The lead receiver here actually was running back Damien Williams, who ran 21 routes of his own. Spencer Ware was out in this game, of course. Williams played 73% of the snaps, had 10 carries and six targets, so not super great volume, but the Chiefs ran just 53 plays. They had the ball for under 27 minutes. Tried to get a read on Spencer Ware's injury status, but if he plays, the backfield's an avoid if you can situation, but if he's out in week 16, then Williams is back in play. But they do play in Seattle Sunday night football, so they're not going to be on the main slate for week 16.
Yeah, so if you're playing the like full slate, like the Saturday, because there's no Thursday night game, the Saturday through Monday slate, then you should probably just avoid them if they're both active. I think is kind of, I would agree with that, because Williams has played well enough where it's no guarantee that Ware would come back to his previous role. In the Week 15 Number Fire Podcast Network free roll, KG0719 put out a dominant win. They topped the rest of the field by more than 17 points. Chris Carson, Derrick Henry, and the Falcons defense helped lead them to a win, and ending in 3 free months of Number Fire Premium and a bunch of free FanDuel points. If you want to enter Week 16's contest, check out the Thursday preview pod and listen for the URL. Again, the Number Fire Podcast Network free roll every Thursday. URL is within the podcast. Let's move on here to the Saturday game, starting off with the Texans at the Jets, where DeAndre Hopkins did what DeAndre Hopkins does. He had 11 of 26 targets for the team. He had three of the four deep targeted throws. With Demaryius Thomas in town, Hopkins has 35% of the team's targets, though it has been lower in the games that Kiki QT has played. QT has been practicing for 2 weeks now, but still has not been active. But I think that Hopkins, as always, is in play for every matchup and a monster in spots where the Texans may need to throw a little bit. The only other guy here to get more than three targets was Demaryius Thomas with 8. One of those targets was deep. With the Texans, Thomas is at a 17% target share with a few high leverage targets. I'm not a big fan of using him, but I think you can at least make a case for him if QT continues to sit. One of the games QT played, Thomas had one target and no catches. So if QT comes back, I think Demaryius is out, but I have no idea what's up with QT right now. Lamar Miller got hurt early in the game and did not return, but it sounds like he should be good to go for next week. If not, it will be kind of hard to pin down who will step in for him, as they could make Deontay Foreman active for the first time all year. So in theory, it'd be Alfred Blue, but keep an eye on that situation if they make Foreman active. Sam Darnold played well again this week, which does bode well for the Jets for the rest of this year and also next year. The Jets have faced number 5's 7th and 17th ranked pass defenses since Darnold came back. In those two games, Darnold has averaged 0.22 passing net expected points per dropback, which is a pretty good chunk above average. He has also gone deep on 19% of his attempts. It's not a monster number, but it's also not hyper-conservative, and 10 of those deep attempts came on Saturday against Houston. I like this offense in general. I think it's underrated and underpriced. Darnold's looked pretty good, so I think that the Jets are worth buying. They're at home against Green Bay next week, and I will have shares of this offense in that one. The big benefactor of Darnold being decent is Robbie Anderson, clearly, who had another big game here. He had 11 targets. Nobody else had more than 5. 6 of those targets for Anderson were deep, and he had a short touchdown, too. So part of that was because Quincy Enunwa was out, but Anderson has 10, 7, and 11 targets his past 3 games with Darnold, and Enunwa played 80% of the snaps last week when Anderson got 7 and played really well. So I am in on Anderson, too, even as the salary and ownership start to rise. In the first game here with Isaiah Crowell on injured reserve, Elijah McGuire's usage was pretty solid. Played 75% of the snaps, 18 carries, 4 targets. Not super efficient, but you expect that against this Houston front. So with Darnold again playing well, I think McGuire's rest of season outlook is really nice. Brandon, I have generally been, I guess, more forgiving of the issues Darnold has had this year, though. So I want to get your perspective on Anderson and McGuire. I want to play name that price McGuire first, and then I want to hear your thoughts on Robbie going forward. So name that price on Elijah McGuire in week 16.
So he's played, 75% of the snaps the past 2 weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
But I don't like his offense nearly as much as you do.
I don't love it.
I still, yeah.
I just think it's not poop anymore.
I still think that with that workload, I mean, I wrote an article this offseason. Basically, if you can find guys who play, 75% of the snaps, you're setting yourself up for some good fantasy production. That sounds obvious, but snap rate matters quite a bit. So
it's hard to score from the sidelines.
Yeah. So if he's just going to be on the field with few other alternatives, I still think I could get up to about 6,000 with him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would go much higher than that. I guess maybe I could, depending on what the value running backs look like, I think that he would be in play at 65, but I would hope he wouldn't be nearly that high. For Robbie Anderson, I mean, I don't hate it. Again, I just never like buying in on offenses without much scoring equity.
Yeah.
So he's still probably about a 6,000 at most guy for me too.
I would have said 65 for McGuire. So we are kind of split there. That was on the high end for you. Anderson, I think, is about a 62-ish type guy. But for next week, Anderson is $5,900, and Elijah McGuire stays at 57. So I think we can buy them at those prices, right?
Yeah, at those prices, I'm fine with it. I would actually prefer McGuire. That's pretty cheap for someone playing that snap rate.
And his role will be less volatile than Anderson's is, too.
Yes.
So there's value in that. Let's move on here to the Browns at the Broncos. Brandon, Saturday night, Baker Mayfield had a weird stretch in the middle of this game, but still got the win on the road. I will turn to QB wins when they're convenient, and they were convenient here.
Yeah, not a great fantasy game here, really. It's a 17-16 win for Cleveland on the road. Mayfield overall, 18 of 31, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. The touchdowns went to Brashad Perriman, of course, and Antonio Callaway. No Brown had more than 37 yards, but six had at least 25 yards. So six Browns were between 25 receiving yards and 37, and there's not a whole lot we can do with that. Jarvis Landry led with eight targets and 37 yards. He had just three catches, though. Antonio Callaway had seven targets. He caught five for 35 and a touchdown. He was second in routes in four post-bye games. Jarvis Landry has a team-high 21.8% target share, which works out to just 6.5 per game. Then it is David Njoku, the tight end, at 16.8%, which is 5 per game. Then Callaway at 16%, 4.8 per game. Nobody has a quarter of the deep targets or more than three red zone targets in these four games. So I like Baker plenty. He is still matchup dependent. I thought this was not the worst matchup for him based on the injuries that Denver was facing. But whenever you combine that with that dispersed volume, especially when we're looking more at the high leverage stuff, I think that it's probably just Baker and not really any of the pass catchers unless we must. In the backfield, Nick Chubb played 40 snaps, which was almost 60%. He handled 20 carries for 100 yards and had an empty target. Chubb has played at least 59.7% of the snaps in four of his past five, but isn't really pushing for 70% like he had been a few weeks back. It's still a great workload. It's still a great snap rate for Chubb. He has 10 of the 12 red zone carries since week 12. Not really trying to nitpick. I still like Chubb, but I wish he were playing about, you know, 10 percentage points more of the snaps as he had been when he took over. They host the Bengals next week, which is a great matchup for Chubb, for this offense in general. So I'm still buying in. But the pass catchers are really hard to figure out. For Denver, Case Keenum had to throw 48 times here. He totaled just 257 yards. No touchdowns on those. Two picks. Deshaun Hamilton had 12 targets. Tim Patrick had eight. Cortland Sutton, Matt Lacoste, and Philip Lindsay all had six. In two games without Emmanuel Sanders, it is Deshaun Hamilton who leads with a 25.3% target share. He's averaging 10.5 targets per game. Tim Patrick is at 21.7%. He's at 9 per game. And Sutton is at 14.5%, 6 per game. Hamilton also has 5 of the 9 deep attempts. Patrick and Sutton have the other 4 split evenly. Hamilton has led the team in snaps both weeks. Sutton did outsnap Patrick 63-51 on Saturday. That was 86% to 70%, which was pretty much a direct reversal in snap rate from what we saw last week when Sutton was more limited with his quad injury. Sutton, to me, looked pretty good. I like his workload still. I like his talent. But I would still rank Hamilton first, Sutton second, and then Patrick third. Philip Lindsay here played 53% of the snaps after 63, 42, and 65% the past three games. So a little bit lower than I'd like to see. He had 14 carries for just 24 yards, but six targets. The workload was there, but this team's just not always a great bet to lead or score. His snap rate can fall near 50%, so I don't love that. But it was nice to see him get six targets because his receiving work was a bit of a question mark early on in the season. But Devontae Booker and Royce Freeman stole about 20% of the snaps here each. That can definitely happen. They play at Oakland in week 16. I'm certainly not off of Philip Lindsay, but his workload is not necessarily putting him in cash game territory any longer.
Yeah, and that game not on the main slate because it's Monday night. So I agree with you that Deshaun Hamilton is number one among the pass catchers there. Let's talk about the Browns, though. We talked about this before, but if you're going to go at Baker Mayfield, are you stacking him with Nick Chubb? Like, is that your number one option on this offense?
It honestly might be just because he'll throw it to sort of anybody. It's sort of like a Russell Wilson kind of situation.
It is. Yeah.
Or I guess maybe like a Tom Brady. I am putting Baker Mayfield on that same level as Tom Brady and Russell Wilson.
Hey, if we're going to talk about film, Tom Brady had some trash throws. We don't talk about those. We don't talk about Jared Goff's bad throws. Yeah. I'm not mad. I'm really mad, though.
Yeah, but I think really, I mean, it's really hard to go at Jarvis Landry or Antonio Callaway or even David Njoku. Just the not even like anybody's getting a lot of the deep targets, and I can just pick that guy. It's really difficult to get excited about any of these pass catchers.
Yeah, I mean, from a deep target perspective, like the rates aren't there, but Jarvis is at least he had 5 in one game. Like, you know, there's upside there, but like I think people are going to overinflate him based on getting 8 targets in this game based on producing week before that. So I'm pretty sure it's just Baker and Chubb. If I'm, you know, that's my ideal stack. Like, I will roll out other guys for sure, but Baker and Chubb, I think, is my ideal one on this team. Let's move on here to the Sunday slate of games, starting off with Derrick Henry, game number 2, the Titans and the Giants. Just another massive workload for Derrick Henry. He had 33 carries for 170 yards and 2 touchdowns. Just 1 target, you know, because of course, but 33 carries is 33 carries. The problem is that it's kind of unsustainable. Not many dudes get 33 carries each week. Eventually, if they're in more of a neutral script, that lack of passing game work will bite him. But it's clear that the role is expanding. He played 70% of the snaps for the day, which is the most he has played this year by almost 20 percentage points. And the team is pretty decent. Even with Jack Conklin out, they can still get leads. They're big favorites against Washington on the Saturday slate. I think you're going to be forced into using him. But like, just keep in mind, if the Titans fall behind, it's going to be Deion Lewis again. So it's a good workload. It is not a great workload, and there is still some risk involved with it. With Henry blowing up, Mariota and the receivers didn't have to do anything. Both Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor did have 5 or more targets, though. Since Taywan Taylor's return to the past 3 games, he actually has 22% of the team's targets, while Davis has 21%. I think they're both in play if the team has to throw, but that's not going to be the case next week. And Henry's success makes their floors low, along with that of Mariota. The Giants' performance showed the risk of using them when Odell Beckham is out. Eli Manning lost 11.31 passing net expected points and completed less than half his passes, and it killed Saquon Barkley and everybody else. With Barkley, you can still use him in tournaments, even with Beckham out. Last week showed us that, because Beckham was out then, and the Giants had like 40 points in 2.5 quarters. But it really does hurt the floor for Barkley and everybody else. And Barkley is less likely, I think, to hit his ceiling despite what happened against Washington. So having no Beckham downgrades this entire offense. The one bright spot here was Evan Engram. He led with 12 of 44 targets. His previous high for targets this year was 9 back in week 8. The snap rate bounced back up to 69%, which is way up from where it was before the injury. I don't think we can trust him if Beckham is out there, because we didn't earlier this year, but they should be a negative game script next week, so that would allow Engram to be in play if Beckham sits again, though I'm not sure you'll necessarily want to attach yourself to this offense. It is worth reiterating that you can ignore Sterling Shepard. He had 5 deep targets Sunday, but still had just 37 receiving yards. He hasn't had more than that since week 7. He might pop. He very well could against Indy next week, but I don't want to be the one chasing it, even if Beckham continues to sit. Like, his upside is like 60 yards and a touchdown. That could come back to bite me to say that, but like, I'm really, really not tempted to go there. Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Giants and Saquon Barkley. Next week, they are on the road at Indy. Let's assume Beckham sits. Name that price for Saquon Barkley.
I mean, realistically, Saquon's never going to be below 8,000. Even if we worry about the offense,
yeah,
the workload's still so good that he's going to be 85. I would put him probably around 85.
I'm on the Jets in Green Bay still. You idiot. he is 9,000 for next week. I think that is palatable for tournaments, but he is not a must-play in cash at that price by any means.
Yeah, I sort of treated him as a jam him in with Ezekiel Elliott this week.
I did the same, yeah.
And, I mean, I still don't. I think it was okay process. I did not care for many running backs this week, but yeah. I should have been more okay with Joe Mixon against the Raiders on, you know, when they're playing at 10 a.m. their time. And, you know, I had Mixon, but I think that, yeah, Barkley's not necessarily a must play in cash games.
Yeah, my dilemma was Saquon versus Dalvin, because they were the 3-4 in me for cash game rankings of running back, with Jalen Samuels and Zeke being 1-2. And I went Saquon, and I think with Beckham out, I should have known better. I think that was an error in my process, but what happened last week, I think, really influenced that, and I should have overlooked it. So I will reassess going forward for sure. Let's move on here to the Cardinals and the Falcons. nothing can bring an offense back to life, Brandon, like a date with the Cardinals or a date with Josh Rosen's right arm. I love Josh Rosen, but like, he's had a rough year.
Mike Glennon looked good.
Nope. That's a big nope. Nope.
You weren't living on that Mike Glennon, Trent Sherfield stack?
Not even like best ball rosters where you're like, oh, it's round 42. What should I do now? Should I go Cody Kessler or Mike Glennon? We'll go Cody Kessler.
I actually had an embarrassing amount of Trent Sherfield, I won't lie. But
hey, it worked out.
Yeah. This was a 40-14 win for the Falcons. Mike Glennon came in through 14 times, just for some context as to how much this game got out of hand. Josh Rosen got sacked 6 times. He was hit 8 times. It's just not the year for Josh Rosen as much as I want it to be. David Johnson, though, got in some good work early, including a throw downfield with a 27 air yard target. And he had a goal line score before things got out of hand. He has now averaged 20.6 touches per game over his past 5. He can still do some work against weak defenses, but his offense just has him too limited to trust in bad spots or even somewhat questionable spots. He's got a 21.1% target share, which is second to Larry Fitzgerald's 22.4% in the 2 games without Christian Kirk. So he's actually been basically the secondary wide receiver. As for Fitz, he got to 82 yards on his 8 targets, but he had just 28 yards on 5 targets from Rosen. All season, there are just 4 instances of a Cardinals wide receiver getting past 12.5 FanDuel points. 2 of those were from Fitzgerald, 2 of them from Christian Kirk, who again is on IR. It's just a low upside offense. It's really hard to get excited here. There's not a whole lot else to say, frankly. They host the Rams in Week 16, a game that sort of could play out similarly to this one if Jared Goff is okay and still has a pulse by next week. The Falcons came out and dominated this one against the top 10 defense. Matt Ryan was 22 of 36, 231 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nothing overly special, but still had 0.22 passing net expected points per drop back, almost twice the league average of 0.12. He also had a rushing touchdown here. It wasn't a huge game from Julio Jones, but he was solid. He caught 6 of his 8 targets for 82 yards and a touchdown. It was actually just his 4th game of the entire season with fewer than 96 yards receiving. He has a 25.9% target share in 7 games since the bye, which works out to more than 10 per game to lead the team. He has 56.3% of the deep targets in that span. After Jones, though, it's kind of just a mess. Calvin Ridley caught 5 of his 7 targets for 42 yards on Sunday. He's 2nd with a 17.2% target share since the bye. Mohamed Sanu caught 3 of 6 for 30 yards. He's at 15%. Austin Hooper had a donut. He did have a target, but no catches in this game. He has it a 14.2% target share since the bye. The snaps here were pretty telling this week. Mohamed Sanu played 90%. Ridley played 66%. And Julio Jones had to play just 48%. So, you know, Jones came through, but he just didn't have to play a lot of snaps because this game got out of hand. The biggest problem overall for the non-Julio receivers is that they just sort of spread it around in the red zone and just kind of in the deep ball department as well. So it's just Jones for me for this offense. In the backfield, that's the same case still, even though Tevin Coleman looked really good. He had 11 carries for 145 yards and a touchdown, but he played just 50.7% of the snaps. Ito Smith played 43.3%. You know, even with this, huge game from Coleman, Ito Smith still had 9 carries for 34 yards. And in the first half, it was 6 for 74 for Tevin Coleman, and Ito had 3 carries of his own for 11 yards. They do play at the Panthers next week, who will be on a short week, but I don't think I can look to anybody other than Julio Jones here.
They're on the road. They're outdoors. Second time divisional game. That is so many red flags for this offense. Julio, like you said, he had that rib injury left for a bit. I think they just kind of said, you're good. You already roasted Patrick Peterson once. We'll let you sit. So he's already been sitting out practice. I'd assume he's going to sit out practice again this week, but he'll play. And I agree. He's the only guy to really target there. Let's move on here to Washington at Jacksonville in a second because, oh boy. Before we do so, though, but FanDuel has just added a brand new, never-before-seen slate to their NFL offerings. Second half only. That is right. It is half the game, but all of the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot at halftime? Or maybe you know you got a big win in the bag and you want to double down on your lineup? Well, now you could draft a brand new team for just the second half of a single NFL game. To find one of the available half slates, just select the single game NFL game style and look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel. Let's move on here to this dumpster fire of a mess between Washington and Jacksonville. Washington did win despite their offense doing literally nothing, likely because the Jaguars somehow did less. Josh Johnson did gain 4.59 passing net expected points on his 28 dropbacks, which isn't bad, especially because we've seen Jacksonville's defense still be decent in Jacksonville recently. I'm not going to suddenly start targeting Washington players, but maybe they won't be as big of a target for opposing defenses as expected. I would still think they would be, but, you know, whatever. Nobody in Washington had more than 4 of 24 targets. Jameson Crowder was the only guy to get more than 20 receiving yards. Adrian Peterson had 71 yards on 22 opportunities. So, like I said, you can avoid this team. I actually did use some Leonard Fournette yesterday. That didn't go so hot. He had 11 carries and 4 targets. He apparently didn't get any touches for the first part of the second half, and that was by plan, just chilling on the sidelines. He played just 52% of the snaps. He was in play for DFS because of the volume, but their offensive line is depleted. They have one remaining starter left on their offensive line from day one. But if they're not going to give him that, there is no point in going here. So Fournette crossed off for me. It's not even like Fournette lost volume to anybody in particular. They had just 26 rushes and 16 targeted throws. You can't target anybody in this offense, and you have no reason to trust the defense. So I said cross off Fournette, cross off this entire team. Brandon, we're not talking about this game. Let's move on to Dolphins and Vikings. Dalvin Cook, Undertaker'd, coming back from the grave. What'd you see here in the Vikings' first game under Kevin Stefanski?
Yeah, they took care of this one pretty early. They were up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, ultimately winning it 41-17. Dalvin Cook, I think that we just love Dalvin Cook collectively. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn for you, but...
Nope, you're good.
Okay. He handled 19 carries for 136 yards, 2 touchdowns. Latavius Murray did have 15 carries for 68 yards and a touchdown. The first half split, though, we got to keep in mind, was still just 10-7 for Dalvin Cook. The snaps, Cook played 61%. So he's played 88%, 59%, 77%, 85%, and 61%. So for the most part, elevated snaps this game, again, just got out of hand. So, you know, he's not without any concerns. He can still lose some early, you know, first half work to Latavius Murray, but overall, his workload's back to a pretty elite level. His targets have been up whenever they've been trailing or it's been a neutral script. So I think the arrow is pointing way, way, way up on Dalvin Cook. Kirk Cousins here threw just 21 times for 215 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, you know, even when a quarterback is efficient, the volume almost always kills the pass catchers. Stephon Diggs led with 7 targets. He did catch a touchdown. He had 4 catches overall for 49 yards. So he didn't have a dud, but no other pass catcher had more than 3 targets. Adam Thielen was stuck. He caught both of his 2 targets for 19 yards. Aldrick Robinson problematically stole yet another touchdown, so that certainly didn't help Adam Thielen. But since the week 10 bye, Diggs has out-targeted Thielen 47-40. So that's 9.4 per game to 8.0 per game. Each has 8 deep targets in that span, which is 31% of the team's looks. But Diggs has 7 red zone targets to 4 for Thielen. It's not the hugest split by any means. It's not the hugest sample by any means, but it is certainly worth noting because they are the only two pass catchers with enough of a role on this team to target in DFS. I'll circle back to them in a second and get your thoughts. The Dolphins here had an interesting game from Kalen Ballage, sort of one of my favorite prospects in this draft class. Frank Gore played just 7 snaps before leaving with a foot injury. X-rays came back negative, but this backfield is going to be probably even more of a headache than it had been all year if they give Ballage some run. He had 26 snaps overall, 12 carries, 123 yards, including a 75-yard touchdown. Had just 1 target. Kenyon Drake played 28 snaps, 17 in the backfield, 11 in the slot or out wide. He's been moving around quite a bit lately. Had just one carry and three targets, though, so we can't even look to him. Ryan Tannehill, just 24 attempts, 11 completions, but 9 sacks. Lost 18.2 expected points overall. There's nothing we can do with that. Just one Dolphin had more than 3 targets, and that was Danny Amendola with 8. With Tannehill and Amendola back the past 2 games, we have Kenny Stills with a 26.4% target share, Amendola at 21.4%. That's really it, and even then, there's not a whole lot we can do. And they host the Jaguars next week, so Jaguars are on the road, but it's really not anything that I want to, you know, target with any sort of volume at all. But Jim, I want to jump back to the Vikings and play. Mm-hmm. Name that price, not only on Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, but also Dalvin Cook, because this team has a new coordinator, and I think things might be a bit different over the past few games. So name that price on those three guys.
Yeah, so they are on the road against Detroit. Detroit kept it tight on Sunday, but they've given up. I think we can say that. Outside of Kenny Galladay, who's a beast.
Yeah.
They've given up. So I think it'll be another rush-heavy script. Even Damon Harrison there, like, I think that's going to be a rush-heavy script. So I would say for Dalvin Cook, the appropriate price is like 72, maybe? Where do you sit there?
I would say up to 75, and he is 71.
Okay, I'll buy that. That's cool. I can take that for sure. For the receivers, I think that the upside is there. The problem is I don't think they're going to have to throw that much. Stephon Diggs does get a tougher cornerback matchup this time with Darius Slay. And he's kind of been volatile based on matchups. So I would pay 75 for Thielen, 73 for Diggs.
Thielen is 76, Diggs is 73.
Okay. I think that's very specific to that matchup. If they were in a neutral matchup where they were, like, if they're facing the Dolphins again, I might put Diggs ahead of Thielen, but I think because of that specific defense, I put Diggs lower. What about for you?
I'm going to struggle with this one pretty much all week. I think they're, with their prices being close enough, it's probably going to be one of those situations where I build the same lineup and just swap them out. Have an extra 300 to get up from Diggs to Thielen in my lineups and just sort of build the duplicate lineups and swap them out.
I think that's fair because their workloads are almost even. So why not? Honestly,
yeah.
But Cook is very interesting.
According to FanDuel Sportsbook, the Vikings are 5.5 point favorites in that one.
And I think that because Harrison is there, it sets up better for a game to use Dalvin Cook against those linebackers. So, like, I don't worry as much about Latavius Murray. He's terrible anyway. But you know. Let's move on here to the Cowboys and the Colts. This game was a good game for people who are truthers of offensive line health. The positive side is the Colts. They got center Ryan Kelly back, and it allowed Marlon Mack to blow up. He had 27 carries for 139 yards and 2 touchdowns. They came with just 1 target, though. Naeem Hines got some work early, but they built the lead, and then Mack just got pounded. Mack's downtick overlapped almost perfectly with when Kelly got hurt. And Kelly is among the best centers in the league. So we need to keep in mind that he's not going to get work as a receiver, but Mack is a potential heavy usage back in a very good offense in a game where they should be pretty heavy favorites next week against the Giants. T.Y. Hilton was banged up, but he played through it with 8 of 26 targets, 85 yards again, because that's what he does. Since the bye, Hilton has 28% of the team's targets, 49% of the deep targets, and 16% of the red zone targets. He is a locked-in stud whenever they're playing inside. Game script next week could be kind of gross, but I think that he is definitely still in play. Down day here for Eric Ebron, who had some drops and just 3 total targets. His previous low for targets in a game without Jack Doyle was 7, and he was also outsnapped by Mo Alie-Cox, 56% to 53%. Alie-Cox, though, ran just 5 routes compared to 26 for Ebron. That low snap rate was likely just related to game script, so the drops are a concern. The floor is a bit lower for Ebron, and games are expected to win, which should be the case next week. But the ceiling and general appeal are still there. I am not out on Ebron despite that snap rate. The Cowboys, on the other hand, did not have all-pro guard Zach Martin for this one, and they also lost guard Xavier Suafilo during the game due to an eye injury. and Dak Prescott felt the effects. His 42 dropbacks turned into negative 9.52 passing net expected points. We've seen Dak have pretty drastic splits in the past based on the health of his offensive line, so keep track of the health of Martin. Sounds like Suafilo should be okay, his eye just swelled up, but he should be good to go. But if Zach Martin can't go, that would constitute a downgrade for this offense. The Cowboys trailed big most of this game. They didn't score. That is the worst situation possible for a running back. But Zeke Elliott still had 14.3 FanDuel points. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. He had 18 carries and 8 targets. His workload is still unreal. And now he's due for some positive touchdown regression with back-to-back games without scoring. He is the one guy I would still be very willing to use here, even behind a depleted offensive line. Amari Cooper, just 32 yards, but his usage actually wasn't bad by any means. 7 targets, 2 of those were deep. This is how receivers go. That was always in his range of outcomes. We should keep the same view of him going forward that we had going into the game. Blake Jarwin, 7 targets for the second straight game, and 2 of them were deep. Michael Gallup didn't have a single target, of course, while Cole Beasley had 7. Gallup still led all the receivers in snap rates, so I think he is a tournament option, but it's likely best to use him at home when the passing offense can blow up. Brandon, I want to talk to you about this Colts offense, though. Marlon Mack, we know the receiving down workload is going to be capped. Nyheim Hines could be there, but they should be big favorites at home against a bad Giants rush defense next week. Name that price on Marlon Mack in week 16.
Yeah, they're 10-point favorites. I still always hate targeting Marlon Mack or any running back who can get scripted out because we're asking a lot. But it's very hard to see a path where, especially if Odell Beckham's out, path where the Colts trail. So for Mack, 73?
Yeah, I think that's
too low, too high.
So we said 72 for Cook. Mack will get more carries, but Cook will get more targets. So I think it's actually pretty fair to have them roughly even.
I prefer Cook for sure, but
yeah, I think I'd probably prefer Cook straight up. But Mack is 7,000, so he's still in play, I think. What was Cook's price again?
71.
Okay, so they're right by each other. That'll be a tough choice this week, I think. Maybe that's a trend. We'll compare the workloads of the two.
Okay, we can jot that down because I'll forget.
All right, let's move on to the Lions at the Bills. Brandon, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, other Josh. Hashtag QB wins. Coming through here, got a rushing touchdown. Not a whole lot outside of this. What'd you see in this game?
Yeah, I mean, 14-13 win for the Bills, which just sort of naturally means that there wasn't a whole lot of fantasy production to go around, but that was sort of to be expected given the total here of just 40 points. Josh Allen did net a rushing touchdown, but his 9 carries this week led to 16 yards in total, so a huge deviation from 111.7 rushing yards in 3 games entering this one. As a passer against the bottom 3 adjusted pass defense, Allen was average at best. He had 0.13 passing net expected points per drop back. League average is 0.12. His success rate was below 41%. League average about 50% there. He still has had at least 19.7 fantasy points in 4 straight, but we saw that the rushing floor is not really necessarily a floor for Allen. Of course, he did score, which helped. And touchdowns are better than, you know, trying to run for 100 yards a game as a quarterback, but it wasn't the most satisfying game for me for a Josh Allen skeptic. Robert Foster cashed in for 108 yards and a touchdown on his 5 targets. Isaiah McKenzie caught 6 of 7 for 53 yards. Zay Jones caught just 1 of 6 targets for 11 yards. Since Allen's week 12 return, Zay Jones leads with a 24.5% target share. He's at 6.3 targets per game. McKenzie is second at 5.3 targets per game. Foster has 5 targets per game, which works out to 19.6% target share. The deep looks favor Zay Jones. He's got 31% of those. Foster has 26%. McKenzie's below 10% there. There's just been an average of 28.5 pass attempts in the 4 games with Allen back. So there's really not enough volume. And now there are 3 somewhat intriguing options. And that does not make for a good situation whenever we're trying to guess right for DFS. With no LeSean McCoy, no Chris Ivory, it was actually rookie Keith Ford who led the team with 14 carries and 46 yards because Marcus Murphy left in the second quarter with his own arm injury. Ford played 60.3% of the snaps. This team has been scoring the ball or scoring a bit more lately. They've been moving the ball. And if Ford is like the only healthy back, then that's at least something. But they do play at the Patriots next week, and targeting a running back in that spot, probably not the best decision for long-term expected value. For the Lions, they have not scored more than 22 points in 8 straight games. Matt Stafford was like okay, I guess, 22 of 29, 208 yards and a touchdown, but he has just one playmaker. I don't want to put it all on Stafford or anything. I mean, Kerryon Johnson's out. Kenny Golladay was great. He caught 7 of 8 targets for 146 yards, wrestled a few away from defenders, but you know, nobody other than Levine Toilolo with 4 targets had more than 3. In the past 5 games without Marvin Jones, Golladay has a 27% target share, 8.4 targets per game. He has 65% of the deep targets, 41% of the red zone targets. He's got a great, great workload. There's really nothing else to see here, no matter how much we squint. The backfield committee is getting larger with Zach Zenner now in the fold. Zenner led with 10 carries. He had 45 yards and a touchdown. Theo Riddick had 8 for 47. LeGarrette Blount had 7 carries for 9 yards because he's LeGarrette Blount. The snaps were 26 for Zenner, 25 for Riddick, 11 for Blount, so all below 46% in terms of snap rate. I mean, the offense has been struggling for half a season. They host the Vikings next week. I don't really think anybody other than Golladay is even remotely touchable.
The Vikings defense is touchable for that one for sure. Sure. I want to talk about Robert Foster because I think he's going to get some buzz this week. He has had, I think, more than 90 receiving yards in like 4 of the past 5 or something crazy. He's had multiple deep targets in 5 straight. But as you mentioned, this team doesn't want to throw. However, next week they're on the road in New England. Would Foster be your preferred choice, or are you going at Zay Jones there, or just avoiding altogether?
Yeah, so he's had 94 or more yards in 4 of the past 5. He's scored in 2 of those, but he's done that on 5 targets, 8, 3, 3, and 4.
But when it's such an efficient offense, Brandon.
Yes. The thing is, though, he's not even necessarily – it's like he's not getting deep targets, but Zay Jones has been getting more. If we're looking at like 25 to 30 pass attempts, that's really tough to get excited about. I think that Foster's probably a stay away. If I'm going to stack that game up, I see reason to use Foster, but I'd imagine his price is up to where I wouldn't want it to be. So what, name that price for Robert Foster.
Well, he only gets deep targets. So like he's a super volatile guy. He's Robbie Anderson on a worse offense with lower volume. So he's not Robbie Anderson. He is a $5,300 guy to me. He is priced at 6,000. Zay Jones is 48. So I'll probably prefer Zay Jones next week.
Yeah, he's got the best sort of overall volume at 4,800. That's affordable.
All right, let's move on here to the Raiders at the Bengals. Joe Mixon got awesome usage last week, and he came through again here in a plus matchup. He had 27 carries and 4 targets, going for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. Their season is essentially done, but they're still letting Mixon go here. I think it's justifiable to be wary of Mixon in cash, but he is in play for tournaments until they start to pull back the reins. And I think that's why I can't use him in cash, but for tournaments, that's okay. Tyler Boyd scored early, but left due to a knee injury. He said he should be good to go for week 16, but players tend to be a bit optimistic about their injuries. That's one to keep an eye on. Unfortunately, it's just hard to know who would benefit here if he were to miss time. John Ross and CJ Uzoma both had 5 targets, as did Alex Erickson, but Ross finished with 6 yards and Uzoma had 27. Jeff Driscoll hasn't been bad this year. He's at negative 0.56 passing net expected points overall, so basically 0 for the season per dropback, but a lot of that is thanks to how good he has been when targeting Tyler Boyd. So if Boyd misses time, I think we have to downgrade the entire offense again. Not as much as we do with AJ Green, but still a decent amount. The Raiders' struggles on the road continued here against a pitiful defense. They're averaging 15.4 points per game on the road compared to 21.7 per game at home. Derek Carr has not had more than 16 FanDuel points in a game on the road this year. They're at home against Denver next week on Monday night, and that, you know, things could go a bit more smoothly there based on what they have done recently. So, you know, they did what I expected them to do. Doug Martin had 9 carries and 1 target. He has had 3 carries or 3 targets the past 3 games total. I'm not going to be using him next week against Denver. I guess in the single game slate, I might have to, but if it's a full slate, nope. Jordy Nelson could be in play. He had 8 targets and topped 85 yards for the second time in 3 games. Jordy has 4 deep targets and 2 red zone targets in the past 4 games. Jared Cook is in play with at least 5 targets in 6 straight games, but Nelson is an option now too. And again, I think that this offense is much better at home, so justifiable to take a stab at the Raiders next week. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Joe Mixon, though. Good volume, 2 straight games, but now going on the road to face a divisional foe. So name that price for Joe Mixon in week 16.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, his workload's been good for quite a while, but in this spot, I don't want to go past like 78, yeah. I think.
He was 78 this week, and I thought that was a tad high. I still use him in tournaments, but that price was enough to push me off in cash. I was going to say 75 because they now go on the road.
You wanted it to go down.
I mean, I didn't want to go down. I thought he was overpriced last week, basically, is what I'm saying.
I can see that.
So, like, I think he should be at 75. He's not going to be at 75. He's at 82.
They're 7-point underdogs.
Like, I think you can game stack him in there. But that's about it.
If you game stack that game, it's going to be...
Oh, yeah, it'll be Baker, Chubb. 100%. That's what it would be. And then I'll use my remaining spot on Elijah Maguire because week 16, man, let's go. Yeah, I think that's too high, and that'll prevent me from going crazy hard at him in tournaments, but I think he's worth exposure on the chance they keep giving him that volume. Are you okay with that assessment?
Yeah, he's certainly you can make the case for him. It's not like he's not playable. It's just that his price is a bit too high. But at the same time, it's very likely that just some value opens up that we can get to mix in and not feel quite as bad.
Yep, I would agree with that. Let's move on here to the Buccaneers at the Ravens. Lamar Jackson, Brandon, keeps the train rolling and keeps this Ravens defense as one that suppresses volume for the opposing team.
Yeah, it was another low-scoring game here, which is not good for fantasy. 20-12 win for the Ravens at home. They ran 74 plays, and they faced just 47 plays. So that's not a recipe for even game stacks. I know that there's kind of – I think it's Pat Thorman generally sort of tweets out, like, combined plays per game. It's nothing against that stat or Pat. It's just you got to dig a little bit deeper, and they've been able to control the clock. And I know that this is what some people say happens when you can run the ball, but it takes a very efficient rushing offense and a very good defense to pull that off. And that's what the Ravens have right now. Lamar Jackson did the usual for him, 14 of 23 for 131 yards and a touchdown, but 18 carries for 95 yards. He had 5 red zone carries in this game. He's got such a high floor with his rushing. He has at least 67 rushing yards in his 5 starts, 85.4 per game, 18.2 fantasy points on average, despite averaging fewer than 150 yards passing on 22 attempts. He's got 6.6 yards per attempt. He hasn't been efficient necessarily, but he does have a 53.4% passing success rate. So that's something. It's just not a whole lot of splash plays, which is kind of what you'd expect for a run-first quarterback who can throw it deep every now and again. They're at the Chargers next week on that 2-game slate, so Jackson certainly is going to be in play. The low volume kills the pass catchers here. I think it's time that we would stop chasing them if we could, but again, they're on the 2-game slate, so we got to dig in a little bit. Willie Snead actually leads the team with a 21.1% target share in Jackson's starts. That's just 4.8 targets per game. John Brown is at 4.2 targets per game, so an 18.5% target share. Michael Crabtree is at 3.6 targets per game. The yardage totals over five games are Willie Snead with 171, John Brown with 80, and Michael Crabtree with 95. Good luck. That's all I can say. Gus Edwards was the featured back on the ground. He had 19 carries and 104 yards and a touchdown. He had three red zone carries here, but no targets, just a 42.9% snap rate. And it was actually Kenneth Dixon who led with a 52% snap rate. 40 snaps for him, 33 for Gus Edwards. Dixon had 12 touches, including a target. 50-50 splits are not good for DFS, but again, two-game slate, so both could be in play, and frankly, we probably have to prioritize Dixon in a game where they could trail. It's a tough road matchup for the Bucs here, but you know, the loss bounced them from playoff contention. As mentioned already, they ran only 47 plays. 25 pass attempts for 157 yards, no touchdowns from Jameis Winston. Just two pass catchers saw more than two targets. That was Mike Evans with 9 and Adam Humphries with 6. Mike Evans had 7 deep targets here, of which he caught 3 for 107 yards. So he had more deep targets than anybody else had targets. Since week 12, when Winston came back to start, Evans has a 22.3% target share, as does Adam Humphries. Evans, though, has 56.7% of the deep looks, but no red zone targets. Humphries is tied with Cameron Brate with 29.4% of the red zone looks in that sample. Chris Godwin's at 23.5% in the red zone. Overall, Godwin has 17.7% of the targets, 5.8 per game for him. Cam Brate way down at 4.0 targets per game, about a 12% market share. It's really Evans, then it's Humphries, and then it's kind of nothing. Peyton Barber handled all 19 running back carries for 85 yards and a touchdown. He played 64% of the snaps. He's had more than 8.5 FanDuel points just 5 times all season, but 3 of those have come since week 11, so that's worth keeping in the back of our minds, maybe. They play at Dallas next week with nothing really to play for, though.
Let's go back to Lamar Jackson. Next week on the road against what has become a really good pass defense with the Chargers, is that a situation where the matchup is tough enough where you do lower his floor, or will the rushing in that game be good enough where you still think he is a high floor asset?
I still think that he'll have a pretty high floor. I mean, he had 10... According to Pro Football Focus, 14 of his rushing attempts this week were by design forward scrambles. Mm-hmm. He's still getting designed looks for sure. He also can scramble for yardage. We know that. So I don't even really factor in the passing matchup necessarily for Jackson because he doesn't want to throw.
I worry about it because if they get a negative script, he could have to throw, and that's how you get sacks, fumbles, interceptions, and those are the negatives. From a scoring perspective,
I absolutely agree. I'm trying to contextualize it. We have
you're comparing him to a normal quarterback, which I think is the right thing to do.
We have Josh Johnson, we have Marcus Mariota, we have Phillip Rivers, and Lamar Jackson.
Buddy. Easy. Watch what you're saying here about Mariota. Never mind. I think that that ban has been lifted. Whatever. It's you're right. What you're saying is right. I would lower his floor slightly because of those things like the fumbles and picks.
Yeah.
But I agree with your assessment overall. The floor is still higher than it would be for most guys in that scenario. Let's move on here to the Packers at the Bears. Bears clinched the NFC North here against the Packers, and a lot of it outside of the defense seemed to be because Mitchell Trubisky looked healthy again. He had 14.86 passing net expected points, which is a really solid number. His success rate was 58.6%. This is one of his better games, I thought. So this is a spot where we would have expected him to succeed before his injury, and he did so here. So we should revert to viewing Trubisky the same way we did earlier in the year. That's what I think here, at least. At running back, Jordan Howard had 19 carries and 1 target. Tariq Cohen, 5 carries and 6 targets, but 3 of those targets for Cohen came in the red zone, and he turned one into a pretty impressive touchdown. Howard scored 14 FanDuel points, the most he has had since November 4th. Without passing game work, he lacks a ceiling even when he scores. So I don't even view him as being that tempting, honestly. I don't want to go there. Allen Robinson and Trey Burton tied for the team lead in targets with 7. Cohen was the only other guy with more than 3. Since coming back from injury, Robinson is up to 23% of the team's targets, 31% of the deep targets, and 17% of the red zone targets. Cohen does have the same number of overall targets as Robinson, and he also has a quarter of the red zone targets in that time. So I think if you're deciding to go at the Chicago passing offense, I'd rank Robinson first, Cohen second, and then the rest of the passing game as being all GPP dart throws. It is worth noting Trubisky has struggled on the road this year. They got a good matchup next week, but if we're viewing the same way we were earlier in the year, it's worth downgrading him on the road. An injury worth monitoring this week for the Bears is safety Eddie Jackson. He sprained his ankle, which is better than it looked initially, but he was in a walking boot after the game. An absence for him would justify a slight downgrade for the Chicago defense. The Packers have been eliminated from playoff contention, and it looks like Aaron Jones may be done for the season. He has a sprained MCL, he said, according to Ian Rapoport of NFL Network. That's not going to affect him in the offseason, but it does push Jamal Williams into a workhorse-type role in what will be an unmotivated offense the final 2 weeks. Williams played 87% of the snaps, so there's value in that, but this team is at risk of just packing it in, no pun intended. Devontae Adams got his usual work with 13 targets, 3 deep, 2 in the red zone. Just keep viewing him the same, though it will be harder to trust anybody here with nothing on the line. Randall Cobb was the only other guy to get more than 5 targets. He got 7. 4 of those were deep targets. So if you feel like you could trust this passing offense, Cobb will give you cheap access to it. It will just be hard for me to feel great about this team in general. If I change my tune, though, I will be okay with Randall Cobb. Brandon, though, we saw a lot of work for Jamal Williams here, but we have the concerns around the offense in general and motivation here. On the road at the Jets next week, I don't want to ask name that price on Jamal Williams because he will be underpriced, but can you trust this Green Bay offense as a whole?
Trust, no, and that really pushes them out of like full-on cash game consideration.
Yeah.
I mean, if they had something to play for, Jamal Williams would be almost at any realistic price would be a lock for cash games, but you can't know for sure what the team is going to basically come out and do. They could just sort of just have a dud and not care, and that scares me. So
I don't know
what price are you going to pay for Jamal Williams, knowing that the motivation could easily not be there.
Well, I think it's an assumption situation where if I assume the Packers play well, then he's worth like $7,000 to $7,500.
That's what I was thinking.
Terrible rusher. Like, he's going to get work in the passing game. He's playing 80% of the snaps on a great offense. If I assume they try hard, he's $7,075. But I can't assume that. So, like, I'll assume that in some lineups, like maybe 20% or so, and put him in there because he's $5,800 next week.
Whew, like, that's cheap.
Yeah, I'll make that assumption for at times for sure.
Williams or McGuire?
The Jets have been out of playoff contention for a while. And they have still been playing decent. I think they like Todd Bowles, and I think that might be enough motivation for them to try down the stretch. So I have more confidence in McGuire's team trying, so I prefer him. What about you?
I might. That might be a game where you can just sort of plan both and hope maybe it shoots out and both those guys get some, like, work, and then you save a lot of money at running back. I probably won't do that very often, but I'll probably build some lineups like that.
Because they both get work in the passing game.
Right.
So it's not going to be a situation where if one gets out front, the other is dust. So slight edge to McGuire for me.
You know it's week 16 when you're building Elijah McGuire, Jamal Williams lineups.
Oh, boy. Let's move on here to the Seahawks and the 49ers. Brandon? The 49ers got a win. They shouldn't have for draft reasons, but, you know, they did it.
Yeah, but they built up some momentums. And
yeah, that matters. That matters more than Nick Bosa.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I can't even think of anything witty to say because they should have just
tanked better.
Yeah. It was an overtime win for the Niners. They are now 4-10. So whatever. Matt Breida, though, came back to play 72.6% of the snaps, which I love. but I didn't play him because I was worried about Jeffrey Wilson, who played just 19.4%. So in terms of raw snap rates, it was 45-12 in favor of Breida. Breida had 17 of the 24 carries between them, but he had just four more rushing yards, 50-46. Breida did cling to the receiving work. He had five of the six targets between them. Still a bit nervous tying up a roster spot with a back and a not necessarily great offense with not a whole lot to play for, but Breida is pointing back up for me for sure. The volume here was scattered overall. George Kittle had eight targets, caught just three for 51. He had some overthrows that could have been touchdowns. Breida and Dante Pettis had five targets apiece. Pettis caught all five for 83 yards. Kendrick Bourne had four, two catches, 16 yards. In four post-bye games, Kittle has a 29.5% target share, which is a pretty elite number, especially for a tight end. That works out to 9.5 targets per game. Pettis is at 20% of the targets, 6.5 per game. Kendrick Bourne is all the way down at 13%, 4.3 per game. Pettis is actually led in snap rate in all four of those games. His role is pretty safe right now, but he was already 5,500, and it's hard to want to get past much past that in this offense with any receiver, no matter how much of a big play threat he can be. They also host the Bears next week, which is not necessarily the most envious spot by any means. Russell Wilson got to 30 pass attempts, which I think might be a record for him. I'm not sure. Don't fact check that.
Like double his record.
Threw 31 times, had 23 completions, 237 yards, two touchdowns. He's been efficient all season, but just lacks the volume to buoy sort of any trustworthy fantasy wideouts. Doug Baldwin did have great usage here on his six targets. He caught four of them for 77 yards and two touchdowns. He had three deep targets, two red zone targets, and two end zone targets on 61 snaps, which was more than 81% of the snaps. He's had a touchdown in three of his past four games and four touchdowns in the past four because he had two on Sunday. Tyler Lockett had just two targets for 45 yards, despite playing 68 snaps, 90.7% of the snaps. Just kind of a big disappointment day for Lockett, who had some obviously big plays, just the volume can kill these guys pretty easily. Mike Davis and Chris Carson. Davis had eight targets. Carson had six. It made up almost half of Wilson's 31 attempts. Davis had five carries. Carson had 22 for 119 yards and a touchdown, but the snaps were pretty close, actually. 39-33 for Carson, so a bit closer than we might think. It works out to a 52% snap rate for Carson, 44% for Davis. I always hate trusting either of these backs. Lockett's volume concerns got the worst of him this week. It's not a fun fantasy team by any means. And they host the Chiefs next week on Sunday Night Football, so we don't even have to guess on the main slate. But hopefully that should be a good game.
Ideally. I actually used a good amount of Chris Carson yesterday because of Rashad Penny being out, opening up additional carries for him. And it worked out, but I kind of feel bad process-y when I see the fact that he played 52% of the snaps. I want to talk to you about Doug Baldwin, though. We have not seen it all year. We saw it. He had a decent game in London, and then they went through bye, and I was like, cool, he's back, and then he wasn't back. Is it worth trusting him based on this game, or is it just kind of, you know, someone in this offense will randomly go off, and we still have no idea and no way to predict who it will be in a given week?
I've kind of been of the mindset that it was still Lockett was the better bet other than Baldwin, but the usage here was great. He almost had a third touchdown in this game. He is, I guess, just back to the top bet. But if we're trying to project next week, like I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but it's not on the main slate, so we won't talk about it on Thursday, but Seattle should be able to run the ball on Kansas City. Kansas City can't stop the run. Russell Wilson could throw 25 times again. Sure, Doug Baldwin could catch, you know, two touchdowns on his four catches again, but not really something I want to bank on because the Chiefs actually have really good wide receiver defense.
Yeah, and a 20% target share for Doug Baldwin on 25 attempts is five targets. So
yeah,
that's not great, Bob. Let's move on here to the Pats and Steelers. The game got off to a great start with the long Chris Hogan touchdown, but both offenses started to sputter. They had penalties, they had drops, and it was fun, kind of, just not a great one for DFS. Jalen Samuels was the star for Pittsburgh here. He had 19 carries and 2 targets and finished with 162 yards from scrimmage. In the 2 games filling in for James Conner, he topped 12 FanDuel points both times without scoring a touchdown. I don't know how to view this here. Looking forward to James Conner likely back next week, it wouldn't be a shock if Samuels did steal some passing down work. Conner's floor was looking kind of shaky even before the injury, and we should keep in mind when he comes back, the floor may not be there. I think that like maybe go at Conner, assuming that he goes back to playing 80% of the snaps, but that's not a given, I wouldn't say. Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown were the only guys to get more than 4 targets with 10 and 7 respectively. They just didn't do a whole lot with it. We've seen certain receivers do well against this defense, like Corey Davis and Kenny Stills, but from a cash game perspective, it may be worthwhile to be wary of the Patriots secondary because they do have legit talent there. I'm keeping things equal on Juju and Antonio to where they were before. I think more so just shifting the way I view this Patriots pass defense from a cash game perspective. It is worth noting that Vance McDonald played just 36% of the snaps. That is way down from where he was before. He still scored and is in a great offense, but will likely want to downgrade him going forward, especially when they're in positive game script. Probably not going to happen next week in New Orleans, but worth noting going forward. On the Patriots side, Tom Brady made some bad throws, but we're not going to rail on him because he's Tom Brady. He had one terrible pick in the red zone. He was still okay overall. In the 4 games since their bye week, Brady's averaging 0.39 net expected points per dropback with a 55% success rate. Those are still top-flight numbers, so I'm still buying this offense. It's kind of a down game there against an okay Steelers defense. The big piece I do want to buy here is Julian Edelman. Edelman did hurt his ankle late, and he's had some ankle issues this year, but assuming he is okay, the usage is great. In 4 games since their bye week, Edelman has 26% of the team's overall targets, 19% of the deep targets, and 31% of the red zone targets. He had 90 yards here, so he has yardage and touchdown upside. I think Edelman's a really fun piece for DFS and easily my favorite part of this offense right now. Gronk is at 18% of the targets since the bye. Josh Gordon is at 13%. Gordon's basically a tournament-only play, and that happens when he is in a plus cornerback matchup. That will not be the case next week at home against Tre'Davious White. Gordon does add 24% of the deep targets since the bye, with 23% of the red zone targets. Or sorry, that's Gronk. Gronk has 24% of the deep targets and 23% of the red zone targets. He will have bad games, but the tournament upside is there for sure. For the backs, James White had 7 targets, but he played just 40% of the snaps and was not a factor until late in the game. Sonny Michel, 13 carries and no targets while playing 37% of the snaps. Rex Burkhead stayed in his usual role at 25% of the snaps, though a lot of those were early in the game and White was more of a factor late. I think Michelle's in play that they're going to cruise to victory, which could happen next week. That's probably the only scenario in which you can turn to this backfield, though. So Michelle maybe next week, but I think that's the one script in which I can really tolerate him. Brandon, I want to talk about the Steelers' backfield. Let's assume James Conner is back next week. Are you assuming he goes back to his old role, or did Jalen Samuels do enough, I think specifically as a passer, to warrant additional looks in this offense?
Yeah, I mean, my just number one philosophy with DFS is that I don't know everything, and I don't make the coaching decisions. And I could sit here and say James Conner was too good for Jalen Samuels to have a role. I could also say that Jalen Samuels was too good not to, to get phased out. Right. I frankly don't know. And so with that being the case, I'm going to assume that it's probably not a clear-cut situation here, and they could both eat into each other's role. And that's not really ever something that we see with Pittsburgh, but it's enough to scare me off of just sort of going blindly at either one of them.
Like, Mike Tomlin doesn't rotate running backs, but like he does when it suits him, I guess, is the way to put that. And I think that could be the case with Samuels as a receiver, because Conner was fine as a receiver, but like that's not his strength, I think, is the way I would put that. So I think we could see Samuels get work on like third downs and stuff. Let's move on here to the Eagles and the Rams, Brandon. I'm just going to mute myself and not talk. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is a surprising loss for the Rams to Nick Foles and the Eagles, who are now 7-7. They still have a, you know, it's not a long shot necessarily for them to make the playoffs. It's not above 50% right now, but it's not 3%, and this is a weird spot for the Eagles. Foles was 24 of 31, 270 yards and a pick, 8.7 yards per attempt, 0.20 passing net expected points per dropback. So again, above league average success rate as well at 51.6%. He threw to Alshon Jeffrey 8 times. Jeffrey, of course, didn't play in Foles' first 2 starts of the year. So we got to keep that in mind. It's really hard to dig back into just sort of Foles' target distribution without Alshon Jeffrey or Golden Tate early on. Jeffrey did catch all 8 of his targets for 160 yards, and he also had 4 of the 5 deep targets here. So he had great usage. Zach Ertz had 7 targets, but just 3 catches for 22 yards. He did have 3 red zone targets. Golden Tate had 5 targets of his own, caught all of them for 43 yards. He didn't have any deep looks, but he did have a red zone target from Foles. The first 2 weeks, Nick Foles was bad. 5.5 yards per attempt, 40.2% success rate, but he showed up well here. They host Houston next week. It's not a great spot necessarily. Keep that in mind, but things weren't awful this week from a passing standpoint. The backfield was productive, but messy. Josh Adams led with 15 carries. He had 28 yards and a touchdown. Wendell Smallwood had 10 carries for 48 yards and 2 touchdowns. Darren Sproles had 3 carries, but also 4 targets. They all played between 20 and 24 snaps, or between 31.2% and 37.5% of the snaps. So I think that we can't go there on a full slate. I think that's pretty safe to say. Something's up with Jared Goff. It's 3 games now, and in 3 post-bye games, he has 1 touchdown and 7 picks. He's averaging negative 0.14 passing net expected points per dropback. Still a kind of solid success rate at 47.4%, but just 5.5 yards per attempt, averaging 8.5 fantasy points per game in that split. The volume is still generally going where we would expect. Todd Gurley actually led with 13 targets. He had 10 catches and 76 yards. Josh Reynolds had 12. He got 5 for 70, almost scored, but was just shy of getting in. Robert Woods had 9 targets, 7 catches, 74 yards. Brandon Cooks, 6 of 7 for 59. Gerald Everett, his role is expanding a bit, 5 of 7 for 46 yards. In 3 post-bye games, Robert Woods has a 24.8% target share, so he's up past 10 targets per game. Gurley's actually second at 20%. Josh Reynolds is averaging 8 targets a game at 19.4% of the targets. Brandon Cooks, though, just 16%. It's worth noting that his volume relative to Reynolds is not quite as good, especially knowing that Reynolds actually has 10 of the 24 deep targets. Cooks has 5, so Reynolds has double the deep targets in that 3-game sample. Robert Woods also has 6, so that's worth noting, just keeping in the back of our minds. Todd Gurley was great, 83% of the snaps. Did leave temporarily with a knee injury, but put up 29.4 fantasy points because of 2 rushing scores on 12 carries, plus the great receiving work. I don't really need to say much else. He's got 9 red zone, all 9 red zone carries for this team since the bye. They do play at the Cardinals next week. It's a divisional game. Cardinals are still a pretty solid overall defense. They just gave up 40 on the road, but, again, divisional and at home.
And with Todd Gurley, the offense is sputtering here, as you mentioned, but the workload is still insane. So, on the road next week against Arizona, name that price for me on Todd Gurley.
I feel like Todd Gurley has not been on the main slate for, since week 2, but...
it's probably... I mean, it's not week 2, but it's close. Was the Detroit game, but outside of that, he hasn't, ever.
9,000? Too high? Too low?
I think it's too low. They struggled, but,
I'll pay more than that.
Success rate in that game was over 60%. He had some really bad throws, and he's been bad overall since the bye, but, the sky's not falling here. So I would still pay... 95 for Todd Gurley.
I would too. I would just rather pay 9,000. I never like to go hard.
I'd pay 6,000 if I could. But that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't always love going at a quarterback who's not been great on the road against a divisional opponent who's got a pretty, again, just a pretty good overall defense.
Yeah, they did lose a couple of players last week to IR, and Kandice, and I think it's Josh Bynes. And those are two good players. So I think I'm not
sure, but I mean, the Eagles also weren't exactly the.
Oh, you're right.
Or the Lions.
You're right. Gurley's 96. I think that's very fair.
Yeah, they're favored by 14, so on the road.
Is Gurley a cash game play at that price, given the offensive struggles?
I think Gurley's a cash game play no matter what, because if he's not going to rush for 100 yards, he's going to get like 10 targets.
Yeah. So Gurley in play for cash at 96. We also have Christian McCaffrey at 93 against Atlanta. We haven't talked about him yet because he plays on Monday. Saquon's 9,000. Zeke is 88. Oh, my gosh. Zeke's going to be 40% again.
Yep.
Against Tampa Bay. He should be 40%, so that's fine. But it is a full-on stud running back week. So maybe I don't need Elijah McGuire. That'd be okay. There are worse things in the world. But set up for a pretty interesting Week 16 slate, Brandon. The problem is we need to track which teams have something on the line, because a lot of teams are at risk of just packing things in, and that's pretty scary. So I think it's one of those times a year where we really need to be on our toes for the next couple of days.
Yeah, if any news comes out, if anybody's sort of might be limited, anything like that, we have to be able to react. We have to be willing to react and assume that, you know, if James Conner comes back, that he's not going to play 85% of the snaps guaranteed.
Yeah, always be malleable with your opinions throughout the year, because things can change very quickly. We need to make sure we're reacting, especially as we get into week 16. That is all we have for today. Again, the final recap podcast of the year. We want to thank you all for tuning in for the entire season of these Monday pods. Again, we will have preview podcasts, not only the next 2 weeks, but also into the postseason as well through the Super Bowl to get you ready for those single game slates. So make sure you are subscribed to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, if people have questions for you, where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm at Gudula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sannes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. Do want to thank you all for tuning in for today and again for the entire year. We'll talk to you on Thursday to preview Week 16's action. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.